Lula warns he will not allow others to seize Brazil's critical minerals. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva drew a line in the sand on Tuesday that institutional capital cannot afford to ignore. Brazil will not surrender control of its rare earth and critical mineral wealth, a declaration that transforms Latin America's resource endowment from a trade opportunity into a geopolitical battleground. The timing is no accident. With the Strait of Hormuz effectively closed, China and the US locked in a technology cold war, and Trump preparing for a Beijing summit in May, Brazil just announced it holds veto power over a supply chain that underpins the entire energy transition. Brazil commands the world's second largest rare earth reserves at approximately 21 million tons and supplies over 90% of global niobium, yet operates only one commercial rare earth mine and possesses virtually no refining capacity. That paradox, enormous resource wealth paired with minimal processing infrastructure, is precisely what makes Lula's stance so consequential. Washington has committed over $565 million to critical mineral extraction projects in Brazil and identified more than 50 potential investment opportunities, but last week's U.S. Embassy-hosted Critical Minerals Forum in São Paulo proceeded without a single senior official from Lula's government. Instead, the United States signed a Memorandum of Understanding directly with Goiás State, governed by Ronaldo Caiado, a political rival of Lula, to cooperate on rare earth exploration, a move Brazilian officials interpreted as an attempt to bypass federal authority. Brazil is a very large, powerful country with great mineral wealth such as rare earths and critical minerals. They already took all the gold, all the silver, all the diamonds, and now we will not allow them to take the critical minerals that belong to the Brazilian people, Lula said at an event in Brasilia, according to AFA. Though he named no country, the target was clear. The forum was led by David Copley, a White House National Security Council advisor on mineral supply chains, and attended by representatives from six U.S. federal agencies. Brazil declined to join the 54-nation Critical Minerals Alliance promoted by the United States in February, and in the same month signed a critical minerals agreement with India during Lula's visit to New Delhi, explicitly diversifying beyond the U.S. orbit. The diplomatic freeze deepened after Brazil revoked the visa of Trump advisor Darren Beatty on March 13 for attempting to visit imprisoned former President Jair Bolsonaro, which Brasilia described as undue interference in internal affairs. The strategic choke point China already controls the investment thesis here turns on a single data point. China controls roughly 60% of global rare earth mining and nearly 90% of refining capacity. Washington's $565 million commitment to Brazilian projects is not aid, it is insurance against a monopoly that extends from lithium-ion batteries to precision-guided munitions. The United States has no domestic refining capability for most rare earths, meaning even ore extracted in Brazil would need to transit through Chinese-controlled facilities unless new infrastructure is built. Lula's insistence on closing the refining gap as a condition for any deal with Washington is therefore not protectionism. It is a recognition that the country with processing capacity extracts the margin and controls the supply chain. Brazil's Serra Verde mine in Goiás, the country's only commercially operating rare earth facility, is a microcosm of the problem. The mine extracts ore, but the value creation occurs downstream in metallurgical and separation facilities that Brazil does not possess at scale. Without them, Brazil remains a price taker. With them, Brazil becomes a strategic supplier capable of dictating terms to both Washington and Beijing. That infrastructure build, estimated at multiples of the $565 million the U.S. has committed, represents the real capital deployment opportunity, but it requires either patient sovereign capital willing to absorb geopolitical risk or a trilateral framework that shares margin across the value chain. The Trump administration's decision to sign directly with Goiás was a tactical error that revealed strategic desperation. Bypassing federal authority in a presidential republic signals that Washington views Brazil's reserves as too critical to wait for consensus. But it also handed Lula a domestic political victory, allowing him to cast resource nationalism as defense of sovereignty rather than protectionism. The February agreement with India, whose own critical mineral dependence rivals that of the United States, provides Lula with competitive tension, the most valuable asset in any negotiation. Iran war exposes second-order commodity dependencies. The March 25 announcement that Trump will meet Xi Jinping in Beijing on May 14 to 15, a six-week postponement from the originally scheduled late March timeframe, was attributed to the ongoing Iran war, which the administration now expects to last 4 to 6 weeks. But the conflict has already produced second-order effects that magnify the critical mineral question. Fertilizer prices have surged approximately 50% for urea and 20% for ammonia since the war began on February 28, with FOB granular urea in Egypt jumping to around $700 per metric ton from a pre-war range of $400 to $490. Around one-third of the global seaborne fertilizer trade passes through the Strait of Hormuz, which has been effectively closed to commercial traffic. The connection to critical minerals is not obvious until you map the input costs for mining operations. Energy-intensive extraction and processing require stable commodity prices for power generation, and fertilizer markets serve as a bellwether for broader supply chain stress. Brazil's agricultural sector, the country's largest export earner, faces input cost inflation that will either compress margins for miners or require higher rare earth prices to justify capex. The Middle East produces a disproportionate share of nitrogen fertilizers, and with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Bahrain representing approximately 30% of exportable nitrogen supply now unavailable, the cost structure for Brazilian mining operations has deteriorated. Peru's confirmation on March 25 of a large-scale active geothermal system near the Paucarani-Casiri volcano, approximately 75 kilometers northeast of Tacna and close to the Chilean border, offers a glimpse of the energy diversification that makes resource nationalism viable. The Peruvian Geophysical Institute identified conductive zones associated with fluids at anomalous temperatures, confirming the presence of heat reservoirs with high energy potential using magnetotelluric methods. Unlike solar or wind, geothermal provides baseload power independent of weather, critical for energy-intensive mining and refining operations. Peru currently has no operational geothermal plants despite sitting in the central volcanic zone of the Andes, one of the continent's highest potential regions. If Brazil can replicate that energy independence, either through its own renewables build or through regional power purchase agreements, the economics of domestic refining shift materially. Washington's alliance strategy meets sovereignty politics. Trump's May summit with Xi comes at a moment when U.S. critical mineral diplomacy has stalled in the one region it cannot afford to lose. The 54-nation critical minerals alliance that Washington promoted in February was designed to create a multilateral framework that dilutes Chinese leverage. Brazil's refusal to join, paired with its agreement with India, signals that major resource holders no longer view alignment with Washington as the default option. India's participation is particularly telling. New Delhi has its own border tensions with Beijing and shares Washington's interest in diversifying away from Chinese supply chains, yet chose to negotiate separately with Brazil rather than join a US-led multilateral structure. The investment positioning here is binary. Either Washington offers Brazil a commercial framework that allows domestic refining and margin capture, or Brasilia will continue to shop its reserves to competing bidders. The $565 million committed by the Trump administration is insufficient to build out refining capacity at scale. For context, a single rare earth separation facility capable of processing concentrate into oxides and metals typically requires $500 million to $1 billion in capex and multi-year permitting timelines. The 50 potential investment projects identified by Washington likely include upstream extraction, midstream logistics, and downstream processing, but without clarity on cost sharing and margin splits, they remain deal slides rather than deployable capital. Brazil's leverage compounds as the Iran war extends. If Hormuz remains closed through mid-May, a scenario consistent with the administration's revised timeline for the Trump-Xi summit, commodity supply chains will tighten further, increasing the scarcity premium on non-Middle Eastern production. Brazil's niobium dominance, already a near monopoly at 90% of global supply, becomes even more strategically significant if buyers cannot rely on predictable shipping routes from alternative suppliers. Niobium is critical for high-strength steel alloys used in pipelines, aerospace, and defense applications, industries where supply interruptions carry national security implications. The Plaquemium view Lula's critical mineral nationalism is not a negotiating posture, it is the opening bid in a decade-long infrastructure financing negotiation that will determine whether Latin America captures value from the energy transition or remains a raw material exporter. The policy error most institutional investors are making is treating this as a trade spat rather than a sovereign wealth transfer mechanism. Brazil holds positional advantage because the resource is geographically captive, refining capacity can be built with patient capital, and competing buyers, China, India, the US, all possess balance sheets capable of financing infrastructure at scale. The correct analytical framework is not will Brazil relent? But rather which buyer offers the highest net present value package of capital, technology transfer, and market access? The United States currently offers extraction capex and security guarantees, China offers Belt and Road style infrastructure debt and guaranteed offtake, India offers diversification without superpower entanglement. Brazil's optimal strategy is to layer commitments across all three, using each as leverage against the others while building domestic refining capacity with blended sovereign and commercial financing. The Goiás Memorandum was a misstep because it circumvented federal authority, but it also revealed that Washington is willing to negotiate at the state level if Brasilia stalls, a precedent that increases Brazil's bargaining power rather than diminishing it. The second order opportunity that markets are underpricing is infrastructure equity in midstream and downstream processing. The extraction layer, mines and quarries, will be commoditized by competing national champions. The refining layer is where margin concentrates, and it requires multi-billion dollar separation facilities, metallurgical plants, and logistics networks that cannot be easily replicated. Private equity and sovereign wealth funds should be modeling joint ventures that pair Brazilian resource access with Chinese or US processing technology, structured as minority stakes with put options tied to offtake agreements. The entity that controls separation and refining commands the supply chain. The entity that owns the ore in the ground simply supplies feedstock. The Iran war's extension into May provides a narrow window for deal flow before the Trump Xi summit potentially resets the terms of engagement. If Washington and Beijing reach a broader accommodation on technology and trade, unlikely but no longer impossible given the summit scheduling, third country resource plays like Brazil could see reduced strategic urgency from both superpowers. Conversely, if the summit fails to yield agreements, the scramble for non-Chinese rare earth supply will intensify, increasing the price Brazil can command. Either scenario rewards positioning ahead of May 14. The macro overlay is this: resource nationalism works when the resource is scarce, the holder has alternatives, and the buyers are in competition. Brazil satisfies all three conditions. Lula's rhetoric is for domestic consumption, but the substance, insisting on refining capacity and rejecting extraction-only partnerships, reflects sophisticated understanding of value chain economics. The countries that captured wealth from prior commodity supercycles were those that moved downstream into processing and manufacturing. Brazil is attempting to collapse that timeline from decades to years by using geopolitical competition as a financing mechanism. So what institutional capital must treat critical mineral supply chains as infrastructure rather than commodities? The relevant comps are not copper or iron or trades, but rather LNG liquefaction terminals, semiconductor fabs, and refinery complexes, assets that require multi-year development timelines, regulatory moats, and long-term offtake agreements to justify capex. Brazil's refusal to surrender control of rare earth processing is a demand for infrastructure financing disguised as resource nationalism. The country that writes the check for refining capacity will control the margin. The country that only finances extraction will control the cost. Washington's $565 million commitment is a down payment, not a bid. Beijing's advantage is willingness to deploy multiples of that sum through policy banks with no expectation of near-term returns. Unless Washington or its allies match that capital commitment with equity structures that allow Brazil to retain strategic control, Lula will continue shopping the asset. Watch three variables. First, whether Washington increases its capital commitment before the May 14 summit. Second, whether Chinese policy banks accelerate infrastructure lending to Brazilian state enterprises. Third, whether Brazil announces domestic rare earth refining capacity targets with explicit capex figures. If all three occur, the investment thesis shifts from will Brazil develop processing capacity? To which financial structure captures the cash flows? The energy transition runs through Brasilia, and the price of admission just increased.